Hello, and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier and longer through the way you eat, move, and think. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician, scientist, and lifestyle medicine pioneer. The power of food as medicine is an important pillar, and our guest today has led groundbreaking studies showing how powerful our food choices can be for our health. In this episode, we're going to talk about some surprising ways certain foods can aid in weight loss. I am honored to be joined by Dr. Neil Barnard, who's an adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C., and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Dr. Barnard has led numerous research studies investigating the effects of diet on diabetes, body weight, hormonal symptoms, and chronic pain, including a groundbreaking study on dietary interventions in type 2 diabetes funded by the National Institutes of Health that paved the way for viewing type 2 diabetes as a potentially reversible condition for many patients. His latest book is The Power Foods Diet, the breakthrough plan that traps, tames, and burns calories for easy and permanent weight loss. With more than 120 recipes and beautiful food photography, it shows the surprising ability that certain foods can have to cause weight loss. Dr. Barnard, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Yeah, you know, the Physicians Committee has worked so hard for so many years, and I first just want to thank you for all the work you've done to improve medical knowledge, provide comprehensive nutrition information. I remember your PBS special on the Power Foods for the Brain about a decade ago, and I think it's one of the most impactful specials I've ever seen on PBS. So thank you for your long history of contributions to this field of food and medicine.
Well, thank you. Hopefully much more to come.
Yeah. Foods for weight loss. So this is really just fascinating research that you've done. Can you talk about how you kind of stumbled across these properties of food as power foods?
Yeah, there's been really a shift in weight loss. We certainly know that losing unwanted weight is an important thing for so many people to in order to reduce the risk of diabetes or cardiovascular disease or other problems. But there's been a real shift. It had been, well, you just need to cut calories, and hunger sort of prevented that from being very successful. And then the idea was, well, just don't eat carbs. And there are still some people who do that, but I would say the vast majority of folks have decided that avoiding fruits and starchy vegetables and rice and pasta is something that they don't feel need to do. And so there's been a shift more toward what you're eating rather than how much. And so people have discovered, all right, more plant-based is better than an animal-based diet, more chickpeas, less chicken. But even within that, the latest thing that has come up, and that I'm hoping I captured in the Power Foods Diet, is that new research has really shown that there are certain foods that when you eat more of them, you lose weight. And that was sort of, there have always been inklings of this. And frankly, some of the research, I think many years ago, wasn't very reliable. You know, if you eat X, you're going to lose weight. But in 2015, everything changed. And that was when Harvard University released a major study. They had more than 100,000 people. And they tracked what they ate and they tracked their weight. And they showed that the more their participants ate of certain specific foods, the more weight they lost in subsequent years. And that's just the opposite of what you'd think. You'd think, wait, I don't care what it is. If I eat more of something, I've got to gain weight, even if it's a healthy food. But that's not what they found. They found that if participants increased their portions of certain foods, as time went on, they lost more weight. And the foods were everyday foods, but not necessarily things that people were eating, like blueberries or strawberries or raspberries or green vegetables or cruciferous vegetables or melon or citrus fruits or beans and other legumes. Our job is to test these things and to do randomized trials to see if people will lose weight and then to make it fun. That's what recipes and food photos are all about.
What is it about the foods where the more you eat, the more you lose weight?
It's really one of three things. There are certain foods that tame the appetite. So when you eat what seems like a normal amount, when we actually measure, you've eaten a couple of hundred calories less. And there are a couple of ways that foods tame the appetite. The second thing is that they're what we call calorie trapping foods. So as they're going down your digestive tract, they're trapping calories you haven't absorbed yet. And the calories just go out with the waste. And you literally flush calories down the toilet, which is a wild idea that I don't think anyone's written about before, but I'd love to tell you about how it works. And then the third thing is that there are certain foods that increase the metabolism. And that's just a fancy way of saying that they make your body burn calories faster, more like you did when you were 16. So foods have one of these three effects. Some of them have all three effects.
Let's kind of loop back around to these because this is so groundbreaking and so powerful that I want to spend a little bit more time with each of these mechanisms. So can you give an example of each of these foods and maybe how, for example, they get flushed out and how they boost metabolism?
Well, the calorie trapping one is a particular, it's a very simple one. And I want to credit the researchers at Tufts University, which is in Boston. You know, it's a great research university. Here's what they did. They brought in 90 people, research participants. Half of them, they gave them white bread. The other half, they gave whole grain bread. And the white bread people ate white rice, the foods where the fiber had been removed. Because what they were testing was, would the fiber in whole grain bread, the fiber in whole grain rice, brown rice, would it have a calorie trapping effect? What they did is they fed them these foods. And then they did something that my research team here is never going to do. They got stool samples from everybody. Yes, they did. And they kind of, let's say they analyzed them to see how much in the way of untrapped, unabsorbed energy there was in their stuff. And what they discovered is that by this one change with the whole grain products, you could trap about 100 calories per day. So what's going on? Here's what's going on. This is not rocket science. Whole grain bread, the whole difference between that and white bread is fiber. When you chew up fiber, it breaks into a million sort of little sponges, microscopic sponges going down your digestive tract. And as they go down, they pick up calories you haven't absorbed. They carry them along your digestive tract. Out they go with the waste. You flush them down the toilet. Now, it's about 100 calories per day that one change leads to. And that's not huge, but we're going to add to it about 200 calories a day for appetite taming and about another 200 calories a day for the metabolism boosting. But the beauty of this is you put it together. You are never counting calories. You are never restricting portions. And it works even if you don't exercise. Now, let me say really quickly, exercise is great. I do it myself, and everybody who can should. But in our research studies, we don't allow exercise because that's a confounder. And we have to see just what happens if you're only changing an aspect of your diet. And we find that it works even in the absence of exercise, which is great because, I mean, there are people where exercise isn't really possible for them in a meaningful way. I'm talking about people with significant disabilities or people with a whole lot of weight to lose. To be able to lose a big chunk of weight with a simple qualitative shift in diet is really an amazing gift for them.
And how much fiber does a person need to trap the calories? And do they need it with every meal? Is it just with one meal?
Well, you can do it at any meal, but my hope is that people do it with every meal. Fiber is naturally in your foods. You shouldn't have to buy a bottle of it. So there is fiber in order. The bottom one is the whole grains, which I mentioned. Above that, fruits, above that, vegetables, and the fiber champions of the entire universe are the bean group, beans, peas, and lentils. So when these are the foods that you eat, you're getting that effect. Fiber comes in two forms. The soluble fiber, which is in, say, oatmeal. You make up oatmeal, you know, it's kind of mushy. It's the fiber dissolves in there, which is why it's sort of gummy. That has a special cholesterol lowering effect. Cool. The insoluble fiber, as in wheat or in rice, that's traditionally thought of as a cancer fighter because it's sort of the broom that goes through your digestive tract. True enough. But that's also the part that seems to be the calorie trapper.
Mm-hmm. So the more fiber with every meal, for example, do you get additive calorie trapping? Does it plateau at 100 calories?
No. Well, in the Tufts study, it was about 100 calories. That was just the average. But no, it's not going to plateau. I mean, people can push fiber as much as they want. But enjoy your life. Enjoy. don't feel you don't have to lose 50 pounds this week. Take your time with it. So, for example, let's say you get up in the morning and you want to have a cold cereal. That's fine. If it were me, I wouldn't put cow's milk on it. I'd put in almond milk or soy milk or something like that. Or, wait a minute, let's get fancy. Instead of the cold cereal, let's switch it to old-fashioned oats, and let's top it with berries. Really simple changes. Now, I didn't say high-fiber oats or high-fiber berries, but Mother Nature did when she made them. So the effect is really kind of automatic.
Mm-hmm. And you're reminding me of the recipes in the Power Foods diet. And I actually just made the chickpea cookie dough one, and the recipes are unbelievable. It should be very easy getting high fiber without calling it high fiber.
Oh, you know, by the way, thank you for saying that. I want to give some credit where credit is due. Dustin Harder and Lindsay S. Nixon, Dustin and Lindsay, are the recipe developers that I work with, and they are great. And we had a couple of rules. The rules were easy. I know there are people who want to be gourmet chefs, and they find being in the kitchen kind of, they're in their element. Let me say, I'm not in my element there. After like 20 minutes, I'm ready to be done. So the recipes are ones that even a doctor can do. They're all really easy. And then there are some that we call convenient, meaning you don't even have to go in the kitchen at all. They're, you know, like show me which can to open. The third category of recipe are what we call elegant. And that's where it's French toast with the blueberry syrup. But we're going to put a mint leaf on top and a little spritz of confectioner's sugar down the side and three bowls of different colored berries outside. And the point is, your friends are coming over on Sunday at 11 a.m. for a brunch, and you want to impress them. So if you gave them a little bit of iceberg lettuce in a bowl, that's not going to impress anybody. But if you give them French toast made cool, they're going to think this is the best thing ever. And these are not fattening foods. They look quite the opposite.
Yeah, the simplicity of these recipes is amazing because they're so quick. The calorie boosting effect that you mentioned, you know, I'm an internal medicine and I get asked a lot, what can I do to boost my metabolism? And I think when people say that, oftentimes they're seeking medication, but there are foods that can do this. What types of foods can people eat to help boost their metabolism?
Oh, it's such an important point because there are people who will say, okay, now I'm 45 or 55 or, you know, whatever age they are, they'll say, when I was a kid, I could eat anything. But now I just look at food and I gain weight. What's that about? Is my metabolism slowing down? Your metabolism is slowing down. But it's not genetics. It is not the clock. It's not the calendar. It's not your age. You know, if you're 45 or 55, let me tell you something. You are a young person. Your cells, yes, you have a lot of good youthful biology in all your cells. But your metabolism has been slowing down for a specific reason. And the reason is that every bite of cheese pizza you have taken, some of those fat calories, some of the fat in the cheese or fat in any other food, a burger or whatever, the fat particles go into body fat, but some of them go in a place you really don't want them. Some of the fat particles from the foods you eat end up in your muscle cells. What? Here's the problem with that. Your muscles are your calorie burners. You probably heard people say, don't lose your muscle mass. Your muscle mass, that's what helps your body to burn calories. Well, when fat particles get into the individual muscle cells, it slows down your mitochondria. Remember mitochondria from high school biology? You know, the mitochondria are your burners, and they can't work in an oil slick. And so if there gets a lot of fat in there, the mitochondria slow right down. And researchers have shown that you can do this within 72 hours. Researchers have brought in research participants, volunteers, fed them high-fat meals, measured their mitochondrial activity. In 3 days, you can shut it right down. And in other words, you're not able to burn calories. So how do I want to reverse that? Take the fat out of your diet. And that's really, really easy to do. Have a pizza instead of the cheese all over the top. I'm going to put some extra sauce, nutritional yeast on it to give it that cheesy flavor. These are just little hacks that are really, really simple to do. Okay, that's number one. Number two, there are certain specific foods that I would have fun with. I mentioned the Harvard list, berries, top of the list. A blueberry is blue because of anthocyanins. This will not be on the test, but anthocyanins are a pigment they're also antioxidant. Researchers in the UK, after the Harvard study came out, 2 years later, they put this to the test in the coolest way. They brought in 2,734 participants. Everybody was part of a twin pair. They recruited twins, and they had almost 3,000 of them. Okay, everybody gets a DEXA scan, so you're measuring their body composition. And what they discovered is the twin within each pair that ate the most anthocyanins had substantially less body fat and specifically 9% less abdominal fat compared to her identical sister. In other words, you've taken the genes out of it, and it has all to do with food. So why? The anthocyanins appear to ramp up the metabolism a little bit. But other things do the same thing. Cinnamon does this as well. Cinnamon will ramp up metabolism. In research studies, double-blind studies, using about a teaspoon of cinnamon a day, people have caused weight loss of about 7.5 pounds over about a 16-week period. So the whole idea is don't use just one or the other, but cinnamon on the French toast, blueberry cinnamon syrup, power foods, The weight loss just happens. And in this case, it's through a metabolism boost.
And is the effect of the anthocyanins again through the mitochondria? Is that the common pathway that cinnamon and these foods are boosting metabolism? Or is this now a different pathway?
Fantastic question. And let me differentiate what we know from what we think. What we know is that people who eat these foods tend to be skinnier. We know that the more people eat them, let's say the anthocyanins, the more people eat anthocyanin-rich foods, the thinner they tend to be. We do know that they are metabolism boosters. We don't know if in this case it's related to mitochondria. We do know that a fatty meal slows down the mitochondria, and we also know from our research that you can reverse that. We brought in 244 people and had half of them follow a diet that had no animal fat in it at all, and we kept vegetable oils low too. And we did magnetic resonance spectroscopy on everybody. This is $2,000 per test to do, where you bring them into your scanner, and it's a big thing. But it was the most amazing study. The amount of fat in their muscle cells goes right down. And then you could see their insulin sensitivity gets better, their blood sugars go down, and yes, their metabolism improves. The same thing happens in the liver, by the way. You have accumulating fat in your liver, it goes down too. But the reason I'm hedging on this is that there are multiple mechanisms at work. There's another one that researchers at Virginia Tech discovered, which is maybe the wildest thing I've ever seen. They said fatty foods will slow your metabolism, but by a completely different method, not just goofing up your mitochondria. Here's what it is. They said you have bacteria in your gut, your microbiome. Some of those bacteria are friendly. Some of them are not so friendly. The not-so-friendly bacteria make a compound called endotoxin. It's a toxin. The bacteria make it. It's in your gut. But the good news is you're not absorbing it. It's just in your gut, and you eliminate it bit by bit. The Virginia Tech researchers said, what if fatty foods give you a sort of a leaky gut, meaning that the fat goes down your digestive tract, it makes your gut allow the endotoxin to enter your bloodstream? Could that happen? They brought in individuals, gave them a 55% fat diet. That's a pretty fatty diet. But within 5 days, they showed that that's exactly what happens. They measured the endotoxin in their bloodstream. It came right in the bloodstream. It's doubled within this period of time. And in turn, the endotoxin attacks the cells and makes them not metabolize more well. So we've got a whole bunch of mechanisms for this. And there are more than that. Hot peppers, the capsaicins in hot peppers, ramp up thermogenesis and cause metabolism boost. So there are multiple mechanisms. And I say, what the heck, if I need to lose 120 pounds, let's turn them all on. Let's just turn on the switches.
You mentioned high-fat diets affecting mitochondria and endotoxin production. Can you differentiate the effect of animal fat versus plant fat?
Yes, but I want us to be cautious about both. Actually, and this comes from our diabetes research back in 2003. Can't believe it's been that long. NIH started funding our diabetes work. And that was the first time we really did a large trial in people who had type 2 diabetes. And what we were tracking is, would getting the fat out of their diet, if it gets the fat out of their muscle cells, would their insulin start working better? And incidentally, this was the first time I ever saw diabetes go away. Which when I was in medical school, I was taught that was impossible. And I saw this happen.
Long after medical school too, I will add.
Oh my goodness sakes. Well, I had a man, he was 35 years old. He'd had diabetes for 4 years. He was on metformin. His A1C was 9.5. He came in, he went on a diet, no animal products, kept oils really low. And he lost about 60 pounds. His private doctor saw his blood sugars going down and said, you've got to stop your diabetes medicines. They did. His A1C ended up at 5.3, and you know, which is not even pre-diabetes. And I was totally blown away. But now, since that, I mean, this was 20 years ago. That was very controversial that that was even possible. But now, of course, you see it, we see it, where diabetes is no longer a one-way street. So that's the great news. But what we have found is that you could turn this around by changing the diet and taking the fat out. Now, animal fat versus vegetable fat. At Yale University, our good friends in the Department of Endocrinology did a study where they brought in healthy, young, skinny people. They weren't overweight. They didn't have diabetes. They put in an IV and they ran fat into their veins. It was a lipid infusion. And what they found is that you could cause insulin resistance which is the fat getting into the muscle cells and the muscle cells no longer responding, you could cause insulin resistance, not within years or months or weeks, but within hours. You could do it today with a lipid infusion. So then in follow-up, they said, well, let's Michael Roden and his team. Michael was at Yale, and then he went to Germany to do his at the German Diabetes Center. He started using individual meals and showed you could do it with one single meal. But he did it with different kinds of fat, but you can even do it with organic canola oil. So it's, don't get me wrong, vegetable fats are better than animal fats, but any kind of fat will do it.
If you can induce insulin resistance within hours, can you reverse insulin resistance within hours?
I think it takes longer. It starts within hours, but it takes longer. The body jealously holds on to fat in wherever it is. But what we do see when we bring in people for a diabetes trial, we're doing two of them right now, we warn them at the very beginning, we are serious about this. Our goal is to give you a powerful diet. And we get them prepared for a very rapid lowering of blood sugar, which of course they want. I mean, they can't believe it that it happens. But if they're on insulin and they're changing their diet at the same time, their blood sugar can drop really fast. And so you have to prepare them for it. You have to make sure their doctor is ready to back them off their insulin when they don't need it anymore, because the diet is going to replace it.
And the fat, as you mentioned, it's very nuanced, right, beyond just vegetable versus animal, because there are some healthy foods that are high in fat that are really not as healthy as we think they are. Can you touch on foods that we should perhaps be avoiding that we think are health foods but are impeding our progress towards weight loss?
Yeah, here I'm going to break the heart of many listeners. you know, I mean, there are foods that we love that don't love us back, and we feel a bit betrayed. And at the top of the list is salmon. I'm going to say there are a lot of people who say, well, I don't eat red meat. I just have salmon. In fact, wild caught salmon that I bought at Whole Foods. And what you discover is that your weight loss just stops. I mean, it just stops. It really does. This is not rocket science. If you look at Atlantic salmon, look at the label, it's 40% fat. And if it's Chinook salmon, it's 52% fat. Every fat gram has 9 calories in it. It is so fatty that it will fill you up. But by the time it fills you up, you've taken in a huge number of calories. You contrast that with, say, a bean dish. Beans are not 40% fat. They're 4% fat, lots of fiber. And so the caloric load is quite different. Let me break your heart again. Avocados are terrific avocados.
Oh, no.
Saturday morning with your latte, you know, avocado toast, the greatest thing in the world. However, the avocado didn't read the memo about fruit. You know, apples are low in fat. Bananas are low in fat. Oranges, all fruits are really low in fat. But the avocado is apparently an exchange student from the nut factory, because it is really high in fat. Now, it's not a bad type of fat. It's mostly monounsaturated fat. It's kind of like olive oil. But by the time the avocado fills you up, because it's so fatty, you've taken in a lot of calories. I don't mean to say you can never have it, but if you're really trying to knock down your weight or reverse diabetes, or for that matter, reverse a hormonal condition like menstrual cramps or menopausal symptoms, it's good to avoid the fats. And maybe the last terrible thing to say is, if you saw an advertisement saying that coconut oil has a wonderful mouthfeel and is terrific, a great natural fat, and it's organic, take that coconut oil and put it in your hair, shine your shoes with it, wax your car with it, but do not eat it, because coconut oil is really high in saturated fat. And no matter what they may claim, it does raise cholesterol, specifically LDL cholesterol, and palm oil does the same. And I'm sorry to say that these tropical oils, which are a complete exception when it comes to the botanical oils, they are heavily marketed as being healthy and natural and all this kind of stuff, but they're cholesterol raisers.
Mm-hmm. It seems like this is such an important point, because healthy fats have kind of been welcomed into a lot of dietary plans, like Mediterranean diet, a lot of plant food diets, but the awareness that too much of even healthy fat can have adverse effects, I think is really such an important point, because that gets lost in kind of the conversations around, you know, saturated fat versus unsaturated.
Did a study, a crossover trial in 62 people who wanted to lose weight. and half of them went Mediterranean, half of them went on a low-fat vegan diet. And the Mediterranean diet is typically better than what most people have been doing because it's less meat, but still some. Less chicken, but still some. There's some fish, there's some dairy. There may be a fair amount of oil from olives, olive oil. And so we had people on this diet for 16 weeks. And then after 16 weeks, they switched to the opposite diet. And I'm sorry, what we found really is that the Mediterranean diet sounds sexy. It makes you imagine that you're driving down the coast of Tuscany and you can imagine all the cool friends you're going to have on your yacht. But it is a placebo when it comes to weight loss. It just does not cause weight loss. The vegan diet does make you worry that you're going to have to acquire a taste for folk music to do this diet, but you soon discover that it's not so bad and it causes weight loss really fast. At the 16-week point in this particular trial, when the vegans who had lost a bunch of weight had to start Mediterranean because of the research protocol, they wanted to quit the study. Because on the Mediterranean diet, we said, you know, you have some chicken, you know, have some fish. They said, I'm over that stuff. I've lost my taste for it and I don't want it. And they were regaining the weight they had lost. So we do not use the Mediterranean diet at all. Now, it's not all bad. The Mediterranean diet is better than the diet people were on before, but it does not cause weight loss unless you add a specific calorie restriction, which has nothing to do with the diet. Number two, it does not cause an LDL lowering. It will not improve your cholesterol to a significant degree, at least not in our hands. But third, it does lower blood pressure. We found a pretty good blood pressure lowering effect from Mediterranean diet, which I think is probably due to olive oil having polyphenols in it. I think that's what it is. So it's not all bad, but it's nothing like a truly plant-based diet.
The final thing I want to touch on is now the hottest area in weight loss, which is GLP-1 medications. If you run a primary care practice, you invariably get a lot of requests for these medications. Power foods, diet, and trying to lose weight through diet and these medications, like how would you kind of view these and how would you advise people to proceed?
Well, they're an expensive synthetic for something that your body will do naturally. The retail price for Wegovy or Ozempic right now is about $15,600, at least here. And they do cause nausea and vomiting for some people, but not, you know, for some people, it's not so bad. Some people don't have such bad side effects. But the big problem with them is that although you might lose a significant amount of weight, everyone's different, but quite often it's quite noticeable, but it's not quite where you want to be. And then the weight loss plateaus. And so the patient says to the doctor, increase my dose because I'm not getting the effect. And the doctor say, no, you've been on the maximum dose now for some weeks. And the patient gets upset and says, well, I want to quit it and try something else. At which point the doctor will say, no, don't stop it. Because if you stop it, you're going to regain all that weight. And the patient then says, wait a minute, are you telling me that for the rest of my life, I have to be paying for a drug just only to avoid weight regain? And the doctor then avoids your gaze and says, I'm sorry that you just have to keep taking this drug or otherwise you're going to regain the weight. Okay. My research colleague here, Dr. Hanna Kaliova, measured GLP-1. You know, the GLP-1 receptor agonist, which is Wegovy or Ozempic. They're mirroring something your body does naturally. Your gut makes GLP-1. It's there to turn down your appetite. And so my colleague, Hanna Kaliova, brought in individuals, fed them McDonald's burgers, and found you don't get any GLP-1 release from it. Why? The burger doesn't have any fiber. It doesn't have any complex carbohydrates, which are the GLP-1 trigger. She then brought people back in, gave them plant-based sandwiches, and bang, the GLP-1 levels went right up. So the point is, you don't need a prescription. You can do this naturally. Now, the GLP-1 elicited by foods, it's more modest than the amount you're injecting. With Wegovy, it is. But you're not going to release it at all unless you're eating the foods that are configured to do it. Now, don't get me wrong. You will fill up with McDonald's foods. But what you're filling up with is you're feeling stomach stretch. You're feeling pain. But you have a normal way of turning down your appetite with the GLP-1 receptor in your brain that occurs before the point of pain. So the whole idea is eat the foods that work with your homeostatic mechanisms, turn down your appetite gently and naturally, and you don't find yourself feeling hungry, 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 I've got to eat until I hurt. You can get off of that bandwagon, and it requires change in the foods we eat. The beauty of it is it costs about, in our studies, about 16% less. Your food costs are about 16% less than they were before. So if Wegovy costs a lot more, these foods cost less. For a family of four, it's about $2,000 savings per year. Just from the difference in groceries.
Mm-hmm. And that's so critical because it's not just rapid weight loss, it's how you do it, right? What you just mentioned is not just beneficial for weight loss. You're also reducing your risk of diabetes. You're reducing the risk of heart disease. You are reducing risk of dementia, and the list goes on, versus potentially getting a dose that maybe is not something our bodies are adapted to. And then the satiety is to the point where you don't get adequate protein. So there's collateral effects of how a person loses the weight.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And we've also had the question of, if you're injecting Wegovy or Ozempic, and there are other similar drugs, if you're injecting these things and you know your appetite is reduced, we fear that people are going to be saving what appetite they have for some of their special treats. In other words, you're not learning healthful foods, healthful food habits. So you may be eating less, but if a person follows healthful foods and understands what they are and is able to use the appetite taming effect that they bring naturally, then all the other effects, the anti-diabetes effect, the cholesterol lowering effect, the anti-cancer effect, the anti-dementia effect, all come in as well. So yes, eating less is good, but there are better ways, in my view, to do it. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that there are people for whom these drugs may have a role, say in polygenic obesity, but I think that's a rather modest percentage of people.
Yeah. Dr. Barnard, thank you so much for all this information, but more so all the research that you do, because without the research, we wouldn't have the knowledge of how powerful these foods can be, and to all the research teams that you work with. You know, this is really such important information, and I think sometimes it doesn't get communicated the way that, for example, information about a drug does. I mean, there's so much complexity behind each of these foods. There's so much to learn. And I think a person has to make a commitment to wanting this information and learning it. And sometimes I think people take the path of less resistance, but you have advocated and done the work that has really paved the way for people to understand food in such a different way. So I want to thank you. I also want to ask, you know, how can people find out about the book? Where can they find it and get more information? This book, by the way, if anyone wants to pick it up, is absolutely amazing. The recipes, once again, are some of the best, and I've done a lot of different plant-based recipes over the years. So this is just a fascinating book.
Oh, well, thank you. The Power Foods Diet, it's on Amazon and Target and Barnes & Noble. All the online places have it. But if there happens to be a bookstore that's still open in your neighborhood at the present time, they have it too. And I'm sure they would value your business. But I do have one request. Hopefully people won't share their Wegovy prescriptions, but I hope that they will share my carrot cake or my brownies or these other foods, because when we intrigue people with information about healthy foods and even with healthy tastes, that can spread. You can take a picture of it and you put it on social media, and you'll never know who it is, whose life you'll change. But it is incredibly empowering to discover that you have the ability in your own body to make changes that can really be dramatic and helpful and life-saving. So we want to share it. We don't want to just keep it to ourselves.
Yeah, the kind of ripple down effect of making choices is amazing, and it works both ways. So.
Absolutely.
So Dr. Barnard, thank you so much. This is just great information. And once again, thank you for a lifetime of work that you've done, which is just groundbreaking. And thank you for all that you've done.
Thank you. We're not done yet.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.